spoke last week about the issue of women's smicha and about talked a lot in terms of Misora. So, but I felt a need to elaborate on the idea of Misora. I had a lot of questions about it. What is Misora? Why should it be binding? If it's not halacha, especially, why is it binding? If it is halacha, then let's talk in terms of halacha. So I want to revisit that topic. So last week I began with the Gemara in Sukkah on that Membeis. The Gemara says, Shatina Giyadeh Ladada, when a child first begins to talk, Ovi Melamdoi, the first words that the father teaches his child are Teretzi Velona Moshe Meroshe Gosyapet. And then Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echot. Shmashma Gemara Teretzi Velona first. And I connected that to the Ramban in Gizlei Sabrocha on the Pasuk Yisum Midabrei Secha. And then it says Teretzi Velona Moshe. So the Ramban says Yisum Midabrei Secha means that these are the words that we have to be noisei. These are the dibrois, the words that we have to be noisei al Tosein Atomit. And it seems that there's this extra imperative that we have to teach a child from the youngest age, that we have to repeat our lives, our entire lives, of Teresi V'lonu Moshe Meirosha Kilos Yaakov, which the Ramban explains means that we have an obligation to be of Meirosha, to give over the Mesera unchanged of Teresi. And why is that? So last week I began by asking, why is it so important? Why is it so basic? Something that we have to not even wait until the child goes to school, but something we have to teach the child from the youngest age, so it should be instinctive. So I said then that it's because people by nature, people like chadoshes, people like new things. Human nature is to like new things, and therefore there has to be an instinct that we're going to be able to transmit Torah unchanged from generation to generation. So we have to instill an instinct in every Jewish child of Teretzi V'lonu Moshe, that we want to give over the Meirosha without change. I think I want to add to that. Every generation thinks that it's smarter, more modern, more up-to-date than the generations that have gone before. That's true all the time. That's always true. But there are some generations where it feels the people living in that generation that they're living through a watershed in history. There's been some great rupture with the past and a new heaven and a new earth. The Shamayim Chadoshim and Eretz Chadosha are spread out now before us. The Hellenistic age was an age like that after Alexander the Great conquered the known world. And Hellenism swept the world. The Renaissance, perhaps. The Enlightenment certainly was such a time. And those periods in history are times when it's especially hard for the voice of tradition to be heard. And those were always especially challenging times for Yahadus. In retrospect, in historical retrospect, those periods, while they were important, they were not such a watershed as people thought at the time. The spirit of every age passes. But at that time, the siren song was very powerful. And Yahadus survived because of those Jews who closed their ears against that song. Everything is changing. It's a new world. We have to change too. We're living today through such a period. All around us is the conviction that the feminist revolution has wrought a permanent change in human affairs. There's been a rupture with the past. Everything before belongs to the patriarchal past. And now society, Western society, has made a great moral leap forward. And everything now is different. This is the dividing point in history. One perhaps could be allowed to be skeptical because in so many other respects, Western society seems to be taking a great moral leap backward. But history will be the judge. Meanwhile, though, we have to have the historical perspective to remember that we've heard these promises of a new heaven and a new earth before. And we're the descendants of those Jews who resisted that call, and who heeded the voice of tradition of Mesorah and ignored the panicked cry that we have to change or we'll be left behind. And if we don't have the strength to close our ears to the siren song, then at least we can lash ourselves to the mast of the Ziknei Ador who are steeped in the spirit of Mesorah and the spirit of Yahadus. The glory of Yahadus is Rabbi and Rovo, and the Ramban and the Rambam, and Rabbi Kveger and the Chasam Sofer could walk into our Bate Medrash, could walk into our Bate Knesses, could live in our communities, and feel that we are practicing the same Yahadus that they did. They could talk They would walk in to our yeshivas. They can talk and learning with our Rosh Yeshiva. They could, could discuss halacha with our Rabbanim. They could live in our communities and feel that as far as Yahadus is concerned, much everything else in the world is different, but as far as Yahadus is concerned, they would feel at home in our Yahadus. And every generation is charged with the responsibility of maintaining that continuity. And that's why from the earliest age we're taught Torah Tzivalonu Moshe, Meirosh HaKilas Yaakov, that Torah is not just a Yerusha. An heir can dispose of Yerusha as he sees fit. Torah, it's a Meirosh, it doesn't belong to us, that we can adjust it to our needs or to our preference. It's a Meirosh, it's a trust that's given to us for one generation so that we can pass it on to the next generation intact. This is a halacha. The Gemara says in Baba Kama that if somebody, a shomer, accepted a pikadon, I gave a shomer to watch a bag of gold, but I told them that it's a bag of silver. And then, by some negligence, the silver got stolen or got lost. The gold, rather, it was really gold. I told them it's silver. So the Gemara says that he's only chayav to pay for a bag of silver. He doesn't have to pay for a bag of gold. Because he could say, I was only mekabel the shmir of silver. I was not mekabel. I was mekabel the tirusa de kasva. But I wasn't mekabel the tirusa de dahava. It was more saying that when somebody gives you gold to watch, you have to watch it differently and more carefully than if they gave you silver to watch. And the kind of shmir that's appropriate for the tirusa de kasva is not sufficient for a tirusa de dahava. We have to know that what we are given, what we're charged with, is the tirusa de dahava, with watching that which is most precious. And the kind of risk taking that might be appropriate for Netiusa de Kasva is gross negligence when it comes to Netiusa de Dahava. And that really brings us back to this question. What is Mesoira? What is Meirosh HaKilas Yaakov? Is it a halacha? It's not a halacha. Although it's certainly embedded, the idea of Mesoira is embedded in many halachas. Embedded in the halachas of Minog and in the halachas of Alpitash Teresi Mecha and the concept of Shimish Tamidi Chachamim and in many other areas of halacha. But Meirosh HaKilas Yaakov is not a halacha, it's a chiyuv shmira. It's a chiyuv to safeguard the Mesorah that we've been given by the generation that went before. We might be forgiven a violation of halacha, but we will not be forgiven a dereliction of our duty to safeguard Yahadus and give it over to the next generation as we received it from the Chachmei Adveres and the generation that went before us. That's why I think it's so important to emphasize here the idea of Mesorah. Are there halachic violations in giving women smicha? Very possibly in terms of Sorah, maybe Chukas Ha'akum even. I'll leave that to Biskin to work out. And that's important to define. But a violation of halacha is a private sin. But changing the fabric of Yahadus so that the Ramban and Rabbi Natam and Rabbi Kveger and Rabbi Chaim and Rabbi Moshe and the Rav would not recognize it as their Yahadus is a betrayal of the trust of Doris. And that's far more severe than a mere violation of Halakha. Could be that to the lady, at least to some of the lady, we have to talk in the language of Halakha only. Perhaps they're too caught up in the spirit of the age to be able to hear the voice that we hear in our ear. The voice that says that Klal Yisrael and Chacham Yisrael have been here before, in other generations in which the same insistent demand that Yahadus changed with the times was made. So perhaps to them we have to talk only the language of Allah. And perhaps there are those to whom we have to talk the language of pragmatism. The fact that giving smicha to women would cut our community off from the great bulk of Torah Jewry, the vast majority of Orthodoxy, and virtually the whole community of Talmidei Chachamim would consider any segment of Orthodoxy that made such a change outside the pale. My friend, Rabbi Yitzhak Adlerstein, wrote an article recently, and he made that point very powerfully, and I'm going to quote him. He writes as follows: modern Orthodoxy, like every other subgroup in contemporary Orthodoxy, is dealing with its challenges. But it holds on because it can tell itself that it is authentic, that no massive discontinuity interrupts between the past and the present. It teaches and respects the same Torah that Haredim studied. Conservative Judaism was attractive enough a few decades ago to become the largest of all denominations, and by now it awaits a decent burial. It tried, but it failed miserably at convincing the next generation that it really was the heir to the Jewish past, and therefore the master of the Jewish future. This point is crucial. the mainstream modern Orthodox community that's neither open Orthodox nor Haredi can demonstrate to itself that it sits on the same continuum with Haredi Orthodoxy. This might be questioned by others rightly or wrongly, but it will not dislodge the claim. Modern Orthodoxy can, should, and does make the argument to itself, however, that it shares what's crucial to belief with Haredim. It does not have to accept every Haredi practice and leaning to do that. But if it would let go of that belief, it could not survive. When young people study in Israel, they find an intensity of learning and practice that they cannot dismiss. They find out that the Rambam was a real Jew, and that so is Rabbi Kveger, and the Tzoyis and the Neid of Yehuda. They find a way to prove to themselves that they are part of that Masorah, or they become part of social orthodoxy, and their kids will likely drop out at a faster clip than their own contemporaries. You cannot treat the upper echelon of Torah scholarship as irrelevant, or be utterly repudiated by them, and lay claim to authenticity. That's Rabbi Adlerstein. And the truth is, if we're already talking on a pragmatic level, what it would mean to our community if we accepted such a change. And if already we're talking on a pragmatic level, I want to add something. This yeshiva cannot exist in isolation from the entire Torah world. And by the Torah world, I refer not only to Lakewood and to Mir, but also to Shalavim and to Yavne and to Merkaz and to the worldwide community of Talmidei Chachamim. And if this perception were somehow to take hold, that we here at YU, standing as we do at the front line of this battle, have by our negligence or worse, caused this battle to be lost, or at least lost in the modern Orthodox community, then we will not soon be forgiven, and I doubt that the yeshiva could go on very long. These are all very powerful arguments, but at the end of the day, these are pragmatic arguments. But to you, to our Talmidim, we want to convey much more. To you, whom we are educating to study at the feet of Gdolei HaDoros, and whom we are hoping will be among the future guardians of the trust of Meirosh HaKilas Yaakov, to you we have to try and convey that larger perspective and that sense of burden and responsibility, so that we can, with an easy heart, one day turn over to you the Messiah of Doris, and be sure that you will pass it on to your Talmidim unchanged, the same Yadis that we're entrusting to you. That's what I needed to add.